Before we start this episode of Conversations with Kenyatta, I'm excited to tell you about my new partnership with Audible. Listeners can go to www.audibletrial.com/Kenyatta to receive a free 30-day trial. Audible is a wonderful resource with audiobooks for every reader. It even has titles from authors that have been on my podcast, such as Dr. Dan Bouck's Democracy's Data and Gail Lukasik's White Like Her. And please note that this is an affiliate link, so I may receive a commission with no cost to you, just a free trial with so many wonderful titles. And I love to read. But with that, here's this week's episode of Conversations with Kenyatta. Welcome to episode 5 of Conversations with Kenyatta. Today, I am joined by Janice Lovelace, a genealogy friend and buddy. Janice and I met a few years back when I was speaking at a conference in Washington State. Janice was selected to drive me back to my hotel in Seattle. And during that car ride, we had a conversation that changed my life. And I am forever grateful to Janice. So I wanted to have her here today to discuss the trauma of genealogy research, specifically African-American genealogy research. Thank you, Janice, for joining me today on Conversations with Kenyatta. I'm very excited to have you here because, as you know, you've had a great impact in my life through your advice. So I want to share some of your wisdom with my listeners. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, thank you for having me, Kenyatta. It's my pleasure, and I have always enjoyed talking with you, so I'm glad to be able to chat with some other folks as well today. I started out as a biology major when I went to college. I loved science. I was one of those kids who, you know, was always doing little experiments at home, whether my parents liked it or not. So when I got to college, it was like, oh, I'm going to do biology because I'm a scientist. When you take all those science classes, you have to take other stuff as well, you know, general education things. And I took psychology because a friend was taking psychology and she said, so you should take the class with me. So I fell in love with psychology. She went on and did something totally different, but I love psychology. And so I ended up, by the time I finished college, with both a psychology and a biology major. I had taken so many psychology classes that by the beginning of senior year, it was like, so you need two more and you'll have a major. And I'm like, okay, I'll do that. So I just really liked both of them because they're both problem solving. And, you know, biology, you learn sort of the how to do research and how to approach a problem. And with psychology, it was more like the problem is the people, you know, but how do you help them solve their problems? And so they kind of went together. But by the time I finished college, it was like, so what you gonna do now? You know, you've had fun in college. What's next? And I thought, I'm gonna go to grad school in psychology. So I did that, and I majored in clinical psychology, which was really focused around people and interacting with people. By the time I was in my 20s, I just really couldn't see me working in a lab, quote, the rest of my life. And I loved the people part, the abnormal psychology, or, you know, what's going on with people in their heads. The science piece helped me kind of think like a scientist, as well as the psychology piece helped me think about what are people going through? Why are they going through that? And what can I do to help them? And so then that kind of led to teaching psychology and working. I had a private practice on the side while I taught. And 30 years later, here I am. or 40 years later, I don't know.
Well, thanks for sharing that background. I mean, I think it's important to know, and I can see how what you studied in school can be very useful in genealogy. So what got you started in doing genealogy research?
Well, I think that most of us start because we've got those family stories. Mm-hmm. You know, so-and-so did this. And for me, it was my mom And my grandmother had always kind of kept a family tree. But they told me stories about their family. And my grandmother, when I was little, because she died when I was little, would tell me about her dad who fought in the Civil War. And so that was one of the first things that I tried to find out with genealogy. It was like, I wonder if I could find out, you know, who he fought for. I mean, I knew he fought for the Union side, but what unit he was in. And I didn't know a whole lot about the colored troops, the U.S. Colored troops. But then I started finding out more about that. And then somebody said, you know, you can send away, this was back in the 80s, you can send away to the National Archives and get his service record and get his pension record. I thought, well, that's way cool. So I did that. And then I moved to Seattle, and there's a National Archives a regional office here. And I was like, I'm going to go down there and see what I can find. And, you know, then you just go down the rabbit hole and you never come back. And in the meantime, I was like, oh, I want to go see where they lived. So one time we went back to Kentucky, which is where my grandmother was born, and visited in that area. Don't have any relatives that I know of that are still in that particular town. Mm-hmm. But went to the courthouse and looked through records and looked at land records and vital records. And, you know, you're down in the basement. It's like, okay, I want to do some more. And then you're doing more family. And then somebody hears about it and they're like, can you help me? And before you know it, you're a genealogist.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You're doing research for everybody. all of the friends. I get it. I was there. I was there too. So I'm really interested in your ancestors that fought in the U.S. colored troops. Did you determine if he was a free person of color or formerly enslaved or anything like that?
He was formerly enslaved. Most of the family that I have researched, at least in my direct family line, were enslaved. I found when I looked at his Civil War records, the enlistment record listed the owner.
Oh, really?
And so I was like, okay, wonder who this guy is. And then, you know, a lot when you're doing the research for African-American families pre-1865, it's about finding who the enslaver was and researching that family. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to go back and find out more about that family, more about how he came to that family.
This is interesting to me because, as you know, in doing African-American genealogy, it's often very difficult to actually find the last enslaver, right? Or people right. That's a challenge. But since you've done that and you've traced that family, did you find any documents, or in your research, have you found any documents that list your ancestors' name and a value attached to them, like a probate record or anything like that?
Yeah. You know, sadly, maybe good. Yes, I have found the records. Now, I found something for him, his two brothers, and his mother, and this was in guardianship papers.
Okay.
So Joseph Croom was the person who owned my great-grandfather. And I found, how did he get him? And so he got him because his wife brought enslaved people to the marriage. Mm-hmm. And so then I started studying her, and I found her father's will. And she was a minor when her father died. And then the guardianship papers. And every year the guardian had to say what he did with the property. With her estate. And that's when my great-grandfather was named in those guardianship papers. And there's one last guardianship paper where she was getting married, and it named which people were going with her and which people were staying with her brother. Mm-hmm. And my great-grandfather, his two brothers, and their mother were named in that. There was not a value attached in that particular document, but the estate was split equally. So the five that went with her were equivalent to the five that stayed with the brother. The other document that I found was with his wife. So my great-grandmother and her family. And for them, their next to last owner died in 1862. And when he died, his estate was divided up between all of his heirs and the widow. And all of the enslaved people were named and a value was given for them. And my great-grandmother, her mother, her siblings all went to different families. Mm. Now, luckily, I say that with quotes around it, all of those families kind of lived in the same county. Mm-hmm. So they weren't too far away from one another. And then, of course, the war was going on. And when the war was over, they were able to find each other and kind of live pretty close to one another. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a gut check to see your ancestors, somebody that you've studied. You've been able to trace them back. You know their names. And then you see that on a piece of paper with a dollar value attached to it. And you're just like, wow, yep, you hear about other folks, but when it's your folks, mm-hmm. it just feels really different.
Yeah, and that's what I would suspect. I would expect it to feel different. I mean, I haven't, surprisingly, in my family, I haven't had that happen yet. But I've studied and seen all these other families I have no connection to. And I often feel like I can look at those papers and because I need to, and I want to help people and analyze the information. Yeah. But I often wonder what would happen if it was my Mildred Payne, right? Or my Martha Payne or my yeah. Louis Carter, right? How would I feel? So what advice would you give someone who discovers that their ancestor was enslaved? They just started doing genealogy. Now they hit this harsh reality, I guess.
Well, I think first of all, you know what the history is. So kind of having that expectation that if I can get documentation pre-1865 or pre whenever they were freed or found their freedom, know that you're going to probably intellectually know that this is something that you're going to find out. Mm-hmm. And then when you do, think, okay, how might I feel about that? You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be the only person whose family was enslaved. There are going to be a whole lot of other folks out there who are having this same experience. Maybe talking with somebody else who's had that experience. Maybe if you're doing the research yourself, talking with other family members. If someone's doing the research for you, you know, like if you're on Finding Your Roots or something, or on Genealogy Roadshow, and somebody else has done it, and then, you know, here it is. Here's your document with your family person's name and their value on there. It's like thinking about how would I feel? Mm-hmm. How is this genealogist maybe going to help me process this experience of, yeah, I was, my folks were property. They were listed right there along with the bed and the horses and the cows and the land. There was no difference on those property listings.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting on what kind of prompted me to have you on the podcast is because you mentioned Finding Your Roots and there was an episode with Pharrell, and the visible rage he had with reading that slave narrative. I mean, this is a guy that made the song Happy. Okay, so we're like, okay. But I looked at the TV, and I could not. I was captivated because I could tell that he was so angry and so mad. And like, it made me think, wow, you know, and when he came back, I don't know if they really kind of even finished the story. I just remember him being so mad about it. So when people find these things out and they may have that rage or anger, yeah. So what type of self-care tips could you give people when they discover a family tragedy, not only just slavery, but if there's some type of lynching or some type of violence that occurred, you know, I guess in their ancestors' lifetime or to them directly.
You know, I think it's really interesting. I watched that program as well. And one of the things that he did, or it appeared that he did, was to step away and give himself time to process what had been discovered. And I say that because it looked like he came back and he had on different clothes the second time they talked about it. So it was like, okay, you've taken some time. I don't know whether it was a day or 2 days or 6 months or, you know, what it was. But sometimes we need that time. We need the time to think about what that means to us, how we're feeling about it. Yeah, we can have anger, we can have sadness, we can be depressed. You know, what's it mean, and kind of getting in touch with what that feeling is. And then, is there someone that you can process that with? You know, maybe he went to his therapist if he's got one. You know, maybe he was just talking with other family members about this is what they found. How do you usually handle being traumatized? Because that's what I think of it. Mm-hmm. When you see that, you're being traumatized by what happened to your ancestors. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so how do you generally handle that?
I mean, I think that's interesting when you use the word trauma and traumatized, because I think about it in some of the work that I do. And sometimes I just need to take a step back.
Right.
Because even if it's not people that I'm related to, but sometimes I just find stuff out and I just get mad. So I just have to walk away, you know, slam the computer down. I'm going for a walk because I can't believe this happened.
Right.
But you're right. It is trauma. And I totally agree with talking with someone. That's always very helpful. And, you know, having a genealogy buddy is good. And as you said, you're not the only person doing this. You're not the only person experiencing this. There are others who are having a very similar experience. But I want to kind of switch it up a little bit. And this has come up a lot for me when I was, when we were all back on the road, and I would do presentations. Inevitably, someone would come up to me afterwards and they would say, oh, you know, my ancestor was an enslaver.
Yes.
So there would be a sense of shame and a sense of trying to find the descendants of the enslaved that were property in their family. So what advice would you give someone who discovers that their ancestors were enslavers, that they owned people?
You know, I have those experiences as well. I do one talk on, were your ancestors slaveholders? Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people then want to come and talk about, you know, I don't know.
Right.
What if I find out they are? How should I feel about that? And then you have, of course, those people who are like, oh, that was a long time ago and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And those folks, I want to say, yeah, it does. You know, that may be your response, is to deny it or to push it away. Somebody else's response may be, I feel guilty that somebody 150 years ago did this. I mean, that could be 5 to 6 generations ago. Can't hold guilt for something that your ancestors did. Mm-hmm. But you can think about, what can I do to move forward?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm a descendant of an enslaver, do I have some of that paperwork? Can I share that somewhere? Can I send it to a university special collection? Can I send it to a library in the region? You know, how can I make sure that when people are ready to look for their ancestor who was enslaved, that they're going to be able to find some of that information?
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to reach out and connect with the descendants of the enslaved, and I say do that carefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't really just kind of walk up to somebody and go like, so my people owned your people.
Yeah.
It doesn't work well when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some organizations like Coming to the Table that actually try to help with that reconciliation. How can they maybe help the families of the enslaved? Sort of like what Georgetown is doing. Georgetown University is doing. I mean, are there things that they can do to move forward? in help resolve what those feelings are. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge that you are going to have feelings. And then like, okay, it's bad. Slavery was bad.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here? Right. What can you do that makes a difference?
Yeah, I like that a lot because I appreciate you mentioning the kind of interaction between the descendants of the enslaver and the descendants of the enslaved, right? And making sure you're very careful with that, but also with the paperwork or the documentation that they find. I love giving that to special collections at a university or finding a way to share that. And I always tell people, you know, you have the information we're looking for.
Right.
What we're trying to do is recreate and rebuild that family unit that was broken apart through slavery. That's what we're trying to do. We just help me find my people.
Right.
Pretty much. And you can do that if you have the documentation that I need that may be in your home or at, you know, your great aunt's house or something that you're cleaning out out the basement or whatever it might be. So I think, yeah, definitely trying to help and doing things to help the community in the best way, you know, how also help you kind of deal with it and process it, I think. And then speaking of community, this is always very interesting to me, but as professional genealogists, I often think about, you know, what can the professional genealogy community do to help people deal with the trauma of research?
You know, I think that genealogists who are doing the research for others need to think about how the findings are going to impact them. So that vicarious trauma. Now, I don't really know these people, but I'm reading about it. I'm doing this research. And I find for myself, as I'm researching other families, I kind of get to know that family. Mm-hmm. And then when I find something really negative, it's like I feel like I know these people and something awful happened in their life. You know, maybe it was a lynching. Maybe it was a murder. Maybe we're talking about just the whole system of slavery. So I think about the trauma that I as a genealogist will feel when I'm working with somebody else who's got these traumatic experiences and then thinking about how do I process that for myself. Mm-hmm. It's where the therapy background comes in.
Well, how do you do that? Because I find when I do the research, I think that's the biggest thing for me is because I do research for other people,
right.
But I also just kind of like research slavery as a whole. Right. Yes. So I'm always in it. And I'm, you know, now I'm big into Reconstruction. So, you know, there's a lot of violence that occurs during Reconstruction. So I don't think I have a good way or I've found a great way to kind of process that trauma for myself. You know, and I would love to know how you do it because I think it's something that we do need to understand as researchers.
Well, I think certainly part of it is recognizing that you're going to experience that trauma, that you can't read about all of this, the bad stuff that happened and not have any response. Mm-hmm. Now, you may tell yourself you don't have any response. Oh, it doesn't bother me at all. And then you go, you know, throw a pan at somebody. I would say the best thing is to acknowledge, yeah, you know what? This is bad. This is really ugly. Yeah, it affects me too. And how am I going to handle that? How do I handle it when it's in my own life?
Right.
What do I do that works? And maybe it's going for a walk, shutting down that computer and taking a walk. Yeah. Or it's, you know, going out and having fun with some friends. Yeah. Or calling up another genealogist buddy and saying, you know what I found? Just sort of talking it through. And I don't know how to feel about this. I'm angry. I'm not angry. I'm sad. I'm not sad. How do you do it? Mm-hmm. And maybe you need to talk to two or three genealogy buddies and sort of get that range of what works for you. But acknowledging that you are going to have some response. to that. Mm-hmm. Certainly then when you've got to tell your client, helping to prepare the client for, this is traumatic. We still carry some of that trauma from slavery.
Absolutely.
And it may bring that back up, something we kind of call a re-traumatization. So getting in touch with that trauma from four generations ago is almost re-traumatizing. And so you're thinking about what it must have felt like and how it must have been for that family. And so for my great-grandmother, where, you know, they were split between five different heirs, families, and I think, what was that like to, you had been on the same farm with your family and suddenly your kids who might be 8, 10, 12 are spread out and you might not see them for weeks or months, or maybe they got sold away and you're not going to see them again. Mm-hmm. How do you process that trauma when you hear about it again? You know, how much empathy do you have? Because you might just say, well, you know, that was then. I don't feel anything. I think most of us do feel it.
Yeah. I would think definitely. And I like the comment about preparing your clients for when you tell them. You know, I have a genealogy coaching service that I do, and I was, sometimes these sessions, they're not that long, 1 hour. I feel like they're a therapy session, and I'm not. So all of a sudden I'm like talking about stuff that's not related to a record, but sort of right. The emotional attachment to this family member they're trying to find, or to the relatives that doesn't want them to find this information, or the trauma of what happened to them. So that's been a very interesting experience for me. And I think as a community, we could do a better job of preparing genealogists, right? Professional genealogists in kind of the way they convey or the way they discuss or report, you know, traumatic or violence or whatever you want to call it, information to their clients, right? I think that's something that we need to work on, because in all of the things that we've done in genealogy, I know this is a thing for you too, we really don't spend a lot of time on genealogy and psychology. We don't spend a lot of time on the impact to us and the impact to our clients. What do you think we could do, or what can we do to make sure that's something that we incorporate moving forward?
Well, I think you need to get on the road and do some talking. But you know what it should be at our conferences? Mm-hmm. It should be at places where genealogists get together, groups, either the societies or the larger conferences. People are talking about, how do you work with your clients? How do you give them bad news? How do you take care of yourself as well when you're giving bad news? You know, it takes 5 minutes to show somebody a document. It probably takes the rest of the hour to help them process that document. Or if it's like for real, you know, you're taking weeks probably to help them process what you learned from that one piece of paper.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking that it's interesting that we don't discuss this at conferences, but I wonder if because genealogy has been traditionally, especially with like European genealogy, or people want to be on a Mayflower or a DAR or whatever, that it's really been more around a focus. I'm not going to say just on the positive, but there hasn't been a focus on the negative stuff that happened, because maybe your family wasn't impacted by it. So it wasn't necessarily something you needed to discuss, right?
Right. We haven't said the whole story.
Right. Exactly. So I think that's pretty much that, but that's something we need to do, is to is to tell that story. And I agree with you, societies and conferences need to have that. And as professionals, we need to have some type of training or some type of something to help us with clients when we give them this information. I mean, I know I'm guilty of it myself. You know, I had one client that had a very tragic experience, so I did prep him. But then I had another client who, you know, I'm tracing her enslaved ancestors. And I kind of just said, hey, I think I found this person who might have enslaved I think it was her second or third great grandfather. And I just sent it in an email, and I didn't, You know, I didn't. When she came back, she says, "Oh, this is heavy." I was like, okay, Kenyatta, perhaps you should have done something that a little bit different. But yeah, so it's just stuff like that, right? We may think of it something that's so factual, but yet it's emotional. But I do want to kind of end in, you know, kind of a uplifting kind of, I know we've been talking about trauma, which we need to, because we need to have these conversations, and I wanted to have this conversation. But what advice give African-American researchers, both those that are beginning and intermediate, to kind of keep them going and encouraging them to continue with this research, even though it's hard?
Know that you are probably going to find someone who was enslaved. So you need to know the history. Know the history of this country. If you have people who were here pre-1865, African Americans, they were likely, somebody along that line was likely to have been enslaved. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be, in my case, my great-grandparents. But I'm old, and my grandmother was 10th of her parents, so we were late. If you, I was the last of the last of the last. For somebody else, it might be five generations, but know what the history is of this country and know that you're going to probably bump into enslavement. Even for those folks who say, oh, my people were free. Get your people might have been free in the latter part or the mid part of the 1800s, but at some point they were enslaved to become free. Mm-hmm. Very small percentage of Africans came to this country free and stayed free. Mm-hmm. So just kind of knowing what that history is. And then I say to folks, tell your story. When you find your story, share it. Let others know about the positives in your family as well as some of the pain. You know, mm-hmm. let their voices be heard. Say their names. Mm-hmm. Tell their stories. Tell their stories to your descendants, to the next generations. Tell a story to your cousins. Write about it. Talk about it. Our African American history is as important as anybody else's history, any other group's history. And we need to kind of step up, all of us, and say, this isn't something to be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. I also suggest to folks to reframe how they think about their history. We are descendants of survivors. We're descendants of people who made it all the way through that middle passage. Mm-hmm. We're descendants of people who were enslaved but survived it. So when you think of yourself as a survivor rather than a victim, you feel a little bit more like, yeah, I'm strong. You know, I come from strong people because we made it. Go where they lived. If you can make that road trip back to wherever they lived, go to that courthouse that they may have gone and filed their marriage certificate. Walk in their steps. Some of it will be sad, but some of it will be empowering. Mm-hmm. Did they own land? You know, after slavery ended, did they own land? Go to that land. Walk that land. You know, it's very powerful to be able to do that. So really kind of taking back our power, taking back our strength can be really helpful for the folks who are studying their genealogy and find out some of the negative things that happened in their family. And just focus on the strengths.
I think it's great advice. I do like the resilience part, the survival piece of it, because it's very true. And I was fortunate enough to actually visit the land where my fourth great grandfather and fourth great grandparents and third great grandparents lived in Culpeper County, Virginia, when I lived in Virginia. And the house that they lived next door to was still kind of standing, but it was a very small, very small town. I drove past the place like three times. Ridiculous. And the post office, I thought, was an empty trailer, but it was actually the post office. It was weird. But I was able to go there and being able to just stand, I have a picture of me in front of the home.
Yeah.
And then just looking at that land. And then I drove from, actually that was in Madison County. So I drove from Madison County into Culpeper, where my third great grandfather was a trustee for church, Cedar Grove Baptist Church. So I was able to go to the church and having that connection is great. And I've since written about them in, you know, various publications and even in my book. So I totally agree, sharing their story, giving them a voice, and appreciating the resilience and in reframing our story and reframing the history, because African-American history is American history.
Right.
And right. So in a way in which I love for us to take back our power and say, this is our story, because we're going to tell it the way it should be told, not the way it has been told. So I think that's very powerful. I do appreciate you coming on today and chatting with me about trauma. And I'm so glad that you have the background that you do. I would just slightly encourage you to perhaps start a movement to get some lectures going, to get this professional genealogist not to send an email, you know, or leave somebody before you do that, but to really kind of actually sit and process and understand the trauma of that comes with genealogy and ways to deal with it. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time today to chat with me on Conversations with Kenyatta.
Thank you for inviting me.
Conversations with Kenyatta is produced by Kenyatta D. Berry and Caitlin Owl and features Kenyatta D. Berry. The music for this episode was Good Vibe by Ketza. Follow Kenyatta on Instagram under the handle kenyatta.berry, on Facebook at facebook.com/kenyattadb, and on Twitter at kenyattadb. You can also find more information on her book and upcoming events on her website at kenyattaberry.com.